Hey, this is Keith. I'm the pastor at Truth Community Church, and I want to thank you for checking out our podcast today. Wherever you're listening from, I hope this message leads you to discover Jesus, connect with people, and serve the world. If you want to take your next step, visit us online at truthcommunity.org. Now, let's dive into the message. My son, Nathaniel, he's going to be 4 next month, which is crazy because time went fast. Right? If you're a parent, I see the parents are the ones nodding along right now. Like, yeah, what happened? My children just grew up. I blinked. And I was told all these things, but you don't listen to things, right? We don't listen to things. So I was told it's going to go fast, and I can't believe it. He's going to be 4 next month, and he's already in preschool. And I love it because he's typically the second person to wake up in the house. I try to be the first person, although this week I just kind of got into just vacation mode or something. I wasn't even on vacation, but I slept in a lot, so Nate was waking up first. But typically I'll wake up and then Nate will wake up. And I love it because Nate wakes up with concerns, okay? And these are his concerns. His first concern is he wants an Eggo waffle. God bless his heart. Right? He wants his Eggo waffles. And this morning we had to overcome this moment because all we had was blueberry Eggo waffles, which I don't know why those exist because you don't want to mix fruit with something tasty. So he understands that. And so He said, I don't want that. So we worked through it. He had oatmeal. But he wakes up right away. It's, I want my waffle and syrup. It's his first concern. Then, I mean, you can't eat alone, right? You need a show. Right, you thought I was going to say a person. He needs a show, and so he wants to watch something, Mickey Mouse, PJ Masks, whatever it is for him. And so he's working through his morning. I need my food. I need my show. And then it gets serious. Like, what toy am I going to play with today? Right? Who's coming out of the box? What are we going to play with today? And he's in school, so he's got some schoolwork he has to take care of, and we have him doing chores, and he's got a little chart. So he's got these concerns from the moment he wakes up to the moment he goes to sleep. And I know his concerns to us seem like, all right, really, like Eggo waffles? But the reality is, he and I are identical in that. I want to say that today you and I and the people around you, we all wake up like that, right? We wake up with concerns. We wake up with, what do I have to do today? Some of us, I mean, before you even get out of bed, your eyes open. It's like, okay, you look at the clock. You're like, now I'm really concerned because I overslept and I've got to take care of everything, right? We wake up with concerns. One of my first concerns might be yours is, where's the coffee, right? We can amen that. Let's be Pentecostal for coffee, right? I mean, what kind of a roast are we doing today? What are they brewing? And so we wake up with our concerns and we move into, okay, I need to shower. That's a good concern to have. I should have hygiene. And now I've got to get ready. And if you've got children, it's maybe I got to get them to the sitters or I got to get them out the door. It's just our concerns keep going. And then you get to the office and you've got things you've got to take care of. Or if you're home, you've got things around the home to take care of. And it seems like all day long, we're navigating our life with concerns. Now, I don't think that you, or I know I don't, we don't normally call these things concerns because the word concern is concerning. It's like, no, it's not a concern. It's just what I have to do. And I understand that, and that's probably what I would call it. I wanted to use the word concern because I think it elevates what it is that's really going on. It's a strong word. You know, I'm concerned about getting to work on time. I'm concerned about what they think about me when I get to work. I'm concerned about my family. I'm concerned about my physical health. I'm concerned about my money, right? These are the things that we go through on a normal daily basis. You have your list of concerns, and they may or may not include an Eggo waffle, but the truth is we all have concerns. Now, here's what we're not going to spend the next 30 minutes talking about. I am not going to convince you that you shouldn't be concerned about those things, okay? So let your guard down. Stay with me here. I don't believe that the answer is, you know what? You need to just throw it to God and don't think about your marriage. Your marriage will take care of itself. You don't have to tell her you love her. I mean, don't spend any time with him. God's got this. That's not the answer. If I stood up here even for 30 minutes and tried to convince you of that, I would be a liar. You know that. We have these concerns. We're concerned about our jobs. We're concerned about retirement and finances. We're concerned about health. It's why we love kale. It's why quinoa is the thing. I love quinoa. Amy makes this good quinoa bake with black beans and such. It is very good. It was my birthday meal. I love it that much. Thank you, babe.
So I love quinoa. But why are we eating quinoa and kale? Because we're trying to live longer, because we're trying to stay healthier. Because a balanced breakfast in the 80s involved sugar cereal, and now it doesn't. So we just keep moving towards a direction that says, okay, we have concerns, now we need to respond to the concerns. And you've got your concerns, and I've got my concerns. And I don't believe that our concerns are wrong. I'm not going to stop being concerned over my marriage, over my children, stop being concerned about finances. But what I've noticed as I was thinking through this is that a lot of what I'm concerned about can easily be taken away. And I know that it's a morbid thought to have. It's a heavy thought to have. But think about it. You can be so concerned over your business and everything's going into the business. And you know, and I know the reality is here today, gone tomorrow. We saw that with recession. We see that with stock market crashes. I mean, we could put everything we have into investments, make the wisest of decisions. Look, I'm trying to make the wisest financial decisions I can make. But the reality is it can be taken away. I know that I love my wife and I love my children and they love me. But the reality is we, all of us, can be taken away. Can eat as healthy as we want, and we can still go to the doctors for a checkup and get news that doesn't reflect everything we put into. So what do we do with that then? Because I'm not going to stop being concerned about those things. I'm still going to work towards health and finances and my marriage and my relationships. And here's one for me. You know what? Let me be honest. What I struggle with a lot is my reputation and what people think about me. Is my hair out of place? I mean, that's a big one. Right? What do they think about the message? What do they think about where we're going as a church? Am I going to get invited? Are they going to like me? Right? These are things that can easily come up with us. So we don't just show up to the party. We show up with our concerns and we're thinking, what do they think about me? We're concerned. So what do we do with that when all of those concerns, if we're really honest today, can be taken away? And here's another aspect of our concerns, which is interesting. I found that those things that I'm most concerned about, when I start really leaning into them, I start to lose control over them and they start to gain control over me. Come on, you know what it's like when a good thing has become a bad thing because it's become a supreme thing in your life. My marriage was good, but it became supreme when I only looked to my spouse to give me the approval that I need. And if she doesn't compliment me, if she doesn't seem to be leaning into me, then something's wrong and suddenly I'm kind of on edge. Am I doing enough? Am I good enough? And a good thing can very easily become dangerous. Why? Because our concerns start to control us. And that's why for some of us, we haven't slept right, ate right, talked right in a long time because we're concerned and it's controlling us. Now, what I want to talk about today is, in light of all of those concerns, I believe that what we're going to discover together as we read this story is that there is one thing, one concern that you and I can have today that impacts every other concern. There is one concern that if you can grab onto, and everyone in this space can, if this is your first time in church or you've been going to church since you were a kid, if you're following Jesus today, or if you say, I'm not following, I'm just someone invited me, I'm here for lunch after, whatever it looks like for you, there is a concern that you can have and that I can have today that can impact our other concerns. You've got to discover it, because if you don't want to be controlled by your concerns any longer, this concerns you. It does. Now, have you ever watched a show? And it's the beginning of the show, and all of a sudden, the main character is, like, dead. And you're like, hold on, pause it. What did we miss? What happened here? Why are there explosions? When we left off, there were not explosions, and now there are explosions. You start freaking out, and I'm going through Netflix. I'm like, babe, it says 35, 36. We did not miss anything here. And then what happens? You let it play for a couple minutes, and the annoying little box in the bottom says 2 days earlier. And you're like, oh, I see what they did. I see. We didn't miss anything. They showed us the end, and then they brought us back. Frustrating. So I'm going to frustrate you a little, because if you were here last week, we met a family, Martha, Mary, and their brother Lazarus, who died, who Jesus brought back to life. And that wasn't the last interaction that Jesus had with them that's recorded. There's actually one more. But I want to go back to the first time that Jesus interacts with this family. So we're going to do one of those. You saw where it was going, but how did we get there? How did we get to a place where Mary and Martha were able to believe? Remember last week, do you believe? How were they able to do that? What took place before that? Where's like the 8 hours earlier, the 2 days before? That's why 24 was such a good show, because it just kept going in order. You never missed an hour. But I want us to discover this together, okay? Because this family has an interaction with Jesus. And in it, we see that there are concerns all over the story, all over the moment. But there is one sister in this story who grabs onto this one concern that impacts every other concern that you have, that I have, that they had in this story. So we're going to read. It's recorded for us by a man named Luke. Luke was not an eyewitness to everything, but talked to a whole bunch of eyewitnesses. And not even 40 years after Jesus died and rose again, Luke writes down about this story for us. So Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 38. As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Okay, let's pause for a second, get some culture here. This is first century. They're moving towards Jerusalem, so this is Middle Eastern culture. And I know for me, I love being hospitable. I love having people over the house. I love good food, good conversation, good music. But the social interactions that we have today and the hospitality that we show, it's a little bit different than what it was in this day. See, hospitality was not just expected, it was mandated in this culture. You entertain people, especially if they're strangers, which is weird because I wouldn't think to go around and find strangers to entertain. But in this society, you don't leave someone out on the street. If you see someone and the sun's going down, you don't leave them in the marketplace square. You get them into your house. Now, it matters who you entertain because it impacts your reputation in the community. So it's like, well, I hope she opens her house for that guy. She's not coming here. Like a lot of that would happen. But the mandate was you can't leave someone out in the street. They cannot spend the night in the marketplace. So Jesus and his 12 disciples roll in. They're trying to get to Jerusalem. They're at a village. And Martha says, we'll open our house to Jesus. That's a big deal. Come on, how excited would you be to say, Jesus is coming to town. He's staying at my house. This is massive. And it's not just Jesus. It's his disciples that are with him. So you've got a party of 13 guys that are coming over. Some of you are already getting anxious. Calm down. It's not going to happen. Calm down. There's no call after this to come to our house either, okay? 13 guys are coming in, and there's Jesus, and we're going to entertain Jesus. How great is this? And so Martha says, I'll welcome you into my home. This is a big deal. Now, Jesus was a Jewish rabbi, meaning he was a teacher of the law. And so that's an even bigger deal because now she's entertaining someone. She's welcoming someone of status, someone in the community they look up to. Rabbis were very, very respected. And so imagine you have Jesus and his disciples coming to your house. Oh, it's going to smell good. You better believe we are the best pot of sauce that we can make. That is going on the stove. We got Jesus coming over, guys. This is going to be good. I need everything clean, toys gone. In fact, get rid of the kids for today. Jesus is coming over. Nothing is going to screw this up. This is a big deal. And so that's where Martha is. She's got concerns. She woke up with concerns, but now her concern list just got even bigger. And you've had that happen, right? You've gone through a normal Tuesday. It's normal Tuesday. At 1 o'clock, you get a call. You get news. You find out something. Suddenly, you've got more concerns. So Martha, that's where she's living. And so what happens? They come to the house, and her sister Mary, we met Mary last week too, Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he taught. Now, because no one went, oh my goodness, and started whispering, I've got to help you realize what a scandal this is in this moment. This is a big, big no-no. You do not do this. Now, this is not because the Bible is sexist. This is not because the Bible says that women need to be in the kitchen. If you heard the Bible says that, you heard wrong. This is just first century culture. I love the kitchen, okay? But this is first century. In the first century, all around the world, it was the expectation that women were hospitable and women prepared their home for guests. This is how they navigated culture. This is just what it was. And so when Martha says Jesus is coming over as the older sister, Mary is supposed to be alongside Martha, making sure the house is ready for these 13 guys that just rolled in. And Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to him teach. Mary has all the same concerns that Martha should have had in that moment. Martha's concern, is the food good? Is the house good? What are we going to do with these people? We need more chairs. Bring out more chairs. There's 13 of them. Oh, my goodness. And Mary sits at his feet. Now, here's what's going on. Mary is not sitting at his feet because there's no more seats left in the house. In fact, what we're learning here is the fact that Martha and Mary could entertain 13 guys means they had a pretty good-sized house. You don't welcome people in and say, oh, my bad, we only seat two, but we'll figure it out. That you don't do that. And so when they come, there's enough seating to sit. And in this culture, if you weren't sitting on a chair, you would recline, was the other position of just engaging with people. So you either find a seat or you recline. That's your two positions that you are in. Mary shows us a third. And what Mary is doing when she takes this position at the feet of Jesus, it is symbolic. She is saying, I want to be taught by you. I want to be your disciple. That's what this image is. When someone is sitting at the feet of a rabbi, they are saying, you are my teacher. I want to be like you. And that's a big, big deal because women in this culture don't get to sit at the feet of rabbi. They don't. They are taught in school, but not directly from a rabbi. It's just the way culture was. So Mary sees this opportunity like, I've never been taught directly by a rabbi before. And I know there's a million and one things I should be concerned about. I'm going to go sit at his feet. And here's the issue. If you've heard this story before, we walk away from this story and you know what we do? We condemn Martha and we praise Mary. But let me just help you. Martha's not doing anything wrong here. In fact, if one of them is doing something wrong, it's Mary. Martha is observing every cultural expectation that's placed on her. She woke up and she's following her concerns. You follow your concerns. You're going through a situation right now. You know what society is telling you, how you should follow it, how you should be concerned, whether it's relationally or physically or financially. Okay, this is what you're going through. This is what you should do. And that's what Martha and Mary had laid out. And Martha does what she's supposed to. And Mary violates the cultural expectations and is sitting at the feet of Jesus. Now, what should happen next between verses 39 and 40 is Jesus should say, Mary, you're not allowed to do this. In fact, come here. Your sister looks like she's going to kill you right now. Like, you really should go back to the kitchen. I love you, but you're not allowed. That's what should happen next culturally. She's violating the expectations. She has a concern list. She's supposed to stick to her concerns. And Jesus doesn't say that. See, the next verse says, but Martha was distracted by the big dinner. You ever been there before? Come on, guests are in the home and you're not even interacting with the guests because we're trying to get the lasagna out of the oven, right? That's where we live. The big dinner, and she was preparing. So she came to Jesus, this is good, and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? So I like to think that before Martha comes to Jesus, she's as strongly and subtly hinting at Mary to get her butt in the kitchen, which means the garlic is just being smacked. Like, she's trying to chop the onions, and it's like, what is going on in there? I don't know. I think Martha's fighting the pots. I have no idea why it's so loud. And every time Mary's glancing over, it's, you better get in here. One of those is going on, right? Because she's like, are you kidding me right now? We just got 13 guys walking into the house, and you're going to leave me in the kitchen, and you're going to go sit at his feet? You're not allowed to do that. That should not be on your concern list. You've got other things to take care of today. And so Martha does what we tend to do if we have a belief system. Maybe you call it a religion. Because Martha has her belief system. It's been laid out for her. Here's your concerns. Here's what you do. And what happens when you get religious is you start to bring yourself up and put other people down. That's why for some of you, this is your first time in church because you've said, I'm not going to go to church because I don't want to be religious. Because you've met religious people who have brought themselves up and put you down. The beauty is Jesus didn't come to start a religion. He came to start a relationship with you. And so in this moment, Martha's leaning into her religion and what she knows. And she's, Jesus, you kidding me? I'm doing exactly what I've been told to do since I was a kid. This is how you do it. What's up with Mary? I mean, I'm better than her. And I mean, if you're going to have a sibling rivalry and you can get Jesus on your side, you win, right? That's just take the gloves off, walk away. I got Jesus. You lose. I win. And how good is it? I'm the oldest sibling. So I love it when I'm right. I don't talk about it when I'm not. Right? So Martha here is just saying, here's where we are. And Jesus, you're supposed to say something to her because this isn't fair. All of you rolled in. We're being hospitable. And Mary's sitting at your feet. And he says, tell her to come and help me. Come on, Jesus. We all woke up with our concerns today. And Mary's over there just leaving her concerns as she's sitting at your feet. And Jesus responds, but the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. What I really love when I read that is that Jesus is so intentional in how he speaks to people. And I believe that Jesus is so intentional when he looks at Martha, who is just doing what she's supposed to do, who is just following the concerns of her life, and he says, my dear Martha. And he uses this endearing term to say, I love you. I love your concerns. I love the details of your life. But I can see it's weighing on you. You are so concerned over all these details, my dear Martha. And then he says, there's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary, your younger sister, you're trying to win the argument. I'm so sorry, Martha, but Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, here's where I get upset at Luke, okay? This is my problem with Luke. Luke died 2,000 years ago, still mad at him, and here's why. Here's why. So the second half of the Bible, the New Testament, begins with four accounts of Jesus' life, written by Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Luke, as I shared, wrote his account by talking to other people and eyewitnesses. Luke was a successful physician who left his practice to follow Jesus. That's a big deal. And he's writing about this, and he's the only one that records this moment for us. And in my eyes, he drops the ball. You know why? That's where the story ends. We don't get the reply of Martha. We don't get anything else. Luke just drops it right there. Hey, Jesus just says it's not going to be taken away from her. End story. Cut scene. Luke goes to another point in Jesus' life. And that's frustrating to me because it's like, okay, I want to know what happened to Martha. Like, did she then have to grovel? Did her sister win the bet? Like, what took place there? Does she join Mary at his feet? I mean, what happened? Who knows? We're only left to speculate. And you know why? Because I think today, you and I, we get to give the answer for our lives. You get to decide what's most concerning to you. Now, here's the other thing that Luke doesn't do right. I'm sorry, Luke. Here's the other thing. Luke doesn't tell us what it is. He doesn't give us explicit details of what it is. He just says, Mary's discovered it, and it will not be taken away. Okay? So as I look at that, I first start thinking, well, what's it? And because I'm a product of Sunday school, I believe the answer is always Jesus. Like, is it raining outside? Call on Keith. Jesus. Yes, you get a star. That's how I navigated Sunday school. It worked. So you look at this and you say, okay, well, it must be Jesus. Jesus is the answer. It's church. It's always Jesus. Here's the problem with that. Martha had Jesus in her home. It wasn't like Martha never saw Jesus. Mary saw Jesus. Mary knew Jesus. Martha, they both know Jesus. He's in their home. And yet, you can be so busy for Jesus that you don't know Jesus. You've experienced that. I've experienced that. You can be so busy trying to please Jesus, make sure his food is right, the table's set, everything's good. Jesus, I've got you. Don't worry. And in the process, you cannot discover it. And here's what I believe it is. When Mary sits at the feet of Jesus, she is saying, I want to follow you. I want to be a disciple. I know there's tons of people in this room right now. I know I've got to kind of get through 12 guys who are at your feet right now. But I want to discover you personally. I want to be a follower of Jesus. I know you're in my home. I know you're in my life. I know about you. I've heard the stories. I've seen the miracles. I've sung the songs. I've prayed the prayers. But for me, Mary would say, I want to be your disciple. I want to follow you. I want to be most concerned with what you think as my teacher. I want that to be the one thing. The one thing out of all of the concerns that I could have, Mary would say, this is what's most concerning. Am I a disciple of Jesus? Jesus is not praising her because she took a lazy position and sat at his feet. To sit at feet means to be a disciple. And if you know about discipleship, you know discipleship is anything but laziness. Discipleship is not, I'm just going to throw it all up to Jesus and Jesus loves me, this I know. It's not that. It's actively pursuing Jesus. It's allowing that one concern to shape every other concern in our lives. And Mary is saying, this is what matters most. Jesus is in my home. He's in my life. I've seen him. I know about him. But that's not the same thing as following him. And so we don't know what happens to Martha. We don't know where the story progresses. But what I love is that today, April 8th, you get to decide where your story goes. You get to decide as you are seeing Jesus in this space. It's not me. It's not the band. But the music we sing, the words that we read of those who walked with him, our time of community and prayer. In all of that, our hope is that you would see Jesus, but you can see him and you can miss him. He can be in your life and you could never say, I want to discover him personally. I want to be his disciple. Because to be a disciple means you're going to change me to be more like you, teacher. That changes your other concerns. Did you notice what Jesus said there about it? Mary's discovered it, and it will not be taken away. You know why? Because if there's one concern that we can have in our lives that will not be taken away, it is discovering Jesus. It is being a disciple of Jesus. I know that my life can be taken. I know my money can be taken. I know my marriage can be taken. I know my physical health can be taken. I know it's morbid, but you know it's true. It can be taken. Jesus says there's one thing that can't be taken. It's him. It's being his disciple. Because when death tried to take Jesus, death lost. When the grave tried to seal him up, he broke through. And so if there's one concern that you're going to live for, it's going to be Jesus is alive and he changes all my other concerns. And I believe today, April 8th, Jesus looks at us and he says, my dear Keith, my dear Mike, my dear Joe, you're so busy about all these details. You've got your concerns and your concerns are good. And I'm not saying apathy. It's not a call to be apathetic. It's a call to priority. It is a call to say in the list, in the concerns, number one is going to be I'm following Jesus. And here's what's cool. When following Jesus is your first concern, all your other concerns get better. They don't get worse. They get better. See, when my first concern is I'm going to follow Jesus, then I start to ask, okay, Jesus, you're my teacher. How do I treat my wife? And Jesus says, well, you honor her. You love her, no strings attached. You are patient. You don't keep score in your marriage. These are the words of Jesus. Now, if I don't have Jesus being first, I then look to her and say, okay, well, I need affirmation from you. I need approval from you. I need to feel like I'm a good husband. No, no, you found all that in Jesus. He's your teacher. See, my identity is wrapped up in Jesus now. It's to say, you know what, Jesus, I'm following you. What do you say to do with my money? Well, you be wise with it. You save some. You live on some. And you experience generosity. It is beautiful. Jesus changes that. We can be free instead of living for our money and having it control us. We can say, I'm going to live out the principles of Jesus to store some away, to be wise. And man, I'm going to be generous and make an impact in people's lives. Look at our physical health. You know, when you start to follow Jesus, you'd be more concerned about your body because you say, God gave me this. I'm an image bearer. And so I'm going to treat my body with respect. What's cool, though, we don't get full, it doesn't get control over us to where we're anxious and nervous and oh my goodness. No, Jesus is my teacher. Jesus changes my other concerns. You've got concerns, I've got concerns. For some of us, I know. You've got some big concerns today. You're concerned about your family. You're concerned about a spouse. You're concerned about children. You're concerned about starting a family. You're concerned about a business that's doing well, and you hope it lasts, that's not doing so well, and you hope it can change. You're concerned about your financial. You're concerned about your physical. You're concerned about your relational. We're all there. And it's not a call to apathy. It is a call to priority. And when you take the step to sit at the feet of Jesus, to say, I'm a disciple now, you allow Jesus to shape and change that. And that is how we live. So our band's going to come up, and we're going to respond with a song called Give Me Faith. Because is there anything harder than saying, I need faith to trust? This way of living is way different. Come on, I'm not going to be concerned any longer. I'm not going to let it control me any longer. They're still there. Listen, you're going to get home. The bills did not disappear. Jesus didn't do that, okay? Your car's still out there. The relationship's still there. Whether it's broken or put together, it's still there. But what you need to understand today is that there is one thing you can discover, and it will not be taken away from you. And discovering Jesus and being a disciple of Jesus shapes and changes every other concern that you have. And I need this. I love my wife. I love my children. I love what I get to do. But I want to know that Jesus is shaping and changing how all those things are in my life. And I want you to know that today. So I'm going to ask you to stand with me. And I want to pray with you. And if in this moment, as we get ready to sing, Give Me Faith, maybe you're where I am today. And you say, Jesus, I've got my concerns. You know them. But today, I want to be your disciple. For some of us in this space, this is going to be your first decision towards being a disciple of Jesus, towards discovering him. You might call it a Christian. You might say, I'm a follower of Jesus. Whatever your language is. But today, you're going to start discovering. Maybe you say, well, I'm already on the path, but you know, in your journey of discovering Jesus, somewhere along the way, you started to be more concerned with other things. It happens. It's so easy. And so today, April 8th, is when you reorient your life and say, okay, Jesus, the bills are there, the relationship's there, the health is there, but I'm a disciple. So I'm going to ask you to bow your head with me as I get ready to pray. And if you, for you, you would say, I want Jesus to be the Lord of my life. I want to take a first step towards being his disciple. I want to take a re-step towards being his disciple. I want you to raise your hand as I pray and just say, Jesus, here I am. Give me faith to trust what you say. I've got my concerns and you know them, but today I'm declaring I am a disciple of Jesus. So I'm going to pray, and if you want to join in on that, that's why people raise his hand in their space, if you've ever wondered, as we say, Jesus, here I am. So let's pray together, and let's respond, Jesus, here we are, our hands raised to you, saying, we want to be your disciples. We want to take more steps towards saying, I am a disciple of Jesus. You shape and change every concern that we have. At the end of the day, every concern can be taken away, but not you, Jesus. And so we look to you. We sit at your feet today. We trust you. Give us faith to trust you that every concern you know about, you've got it. May we not be so busy working for you that we miss you in our own lives. We love you, Jesus. Amen.